Sherry Turkle was one of the first to notice that we don't just use computers, we have relationships with them. She wrote her landmark book on the subject, The Second Self, more than 20 years ago. That was when we just had desktops. Now, we have desktops and laptops and cell phones and Blackberries and iPods and all the things that go with them. Now, robotics technology is bringing us computers inside personal robots. The first of these have already shown up on store shelves as toys, like the Furby, the Aibo, and My Real Baby. Why is Sherry Turkle so interested in them?
I'm studying those objects because I think that they are pointing us toward a future where computer science and artificial intelligence is very invested in creating objects that reach out to touch us. And I think that we are ill-prepared ethically, emotionally, in terms of how we think about development, in terms of how we think about our human values, to consider these objects and to ask about our human purposes as we confront these objects. Mm-hmm. Many people have come up to me after I've given a lecture on robots and say things like, maybe I'd rather have one of these than a boyfriend. It's a way to have some kind of relationship but not really need intimacy. And from the very beginning, computers have always offered the illusion of companionship without the demands of intimacy.
How new is this, do you think? I mean, pop culture has dealt with this to some degree. I remember a classic Twilight Zone episode in which a man was marooned on a planet and they brought him an android to live with, and he fell in love because it looked like a human. The Terminator movies are always worried about those sorts of things. So it has reached the level of popular discussion, but I'm not sure that on the personal level it's something that we're aware of.
I guess what's new is that I actually have robots that I bring to nursing homes that are, quote, alive enough and sensitive enough to mood and touch and can track people's eye movements and remember their names and chat with them a little. I actually have these robots in my home that I can bring to nursing homes and see how vulnerable older people are to forming relationships with them.
Boy, that sounds scary to me.
Well, I find it very disturbing, and I think we are not well equipped, despite all of our science fiction and despite all of our theoretically, you know, this is old news. It's old news if you go to the movies, but it's not old news if actually we're going to start to be presented with these objects as options for taking care of the very young and the very old. And as always, a technology like this is introduced as helper technology for the most vulnerable, if you will. And what I've been finding is that the hardest thing to do is to leave your mom staring at a wall if she's staying in a nursing home. The second hardest thing is to have her staring at a TV. But it's not so hard at all if she's interacting with a robot.
Well, let's look at that for a moment, because my father is in that situation where leaving him watching the television is not something I'm happy to do. I don't know how I would feel if he were, but if it began to interact with him, if he began to be more animated because of that, would that be so bad?
Well, that's what we need to talk about. For example, if this is in addition, if the robot is in addition to there being people on the scene, that's one thing. When the robot starts to be there as an excuse to not have people on the scene, which is almost inevitably what happens, then I think it is very problematic, because one of the things that computation can do is seduce us into feeling that there is a relationship with something almost inside the computer that is a self. And in fact, there isn't one. And so these objects are pushing on our points of vulnerability, I would almost say on our pushing our Darwinian buttons that make us feel that if something meets our gaze and addresses us and remembers our name, that there is a sentience that's recognizing us there, that's ready to be related to. But that isn't true.
Yeah, that's worth repeating, isn't it? There is no sentient being there. There's no there there.
Yes.
No matter how much it looks like it, it acts like it.
Yes, and but we are uniquely vulnerable to that sense that there's a there there, because as we roamed the swampland, you know, looking for other creatures, the only other creatures that met our gaze, gestured in recognition, and began to speak to us, let's face it, were us. So we're uniquely vulnerable, and now we have a technology that is pushing on these vulnerabilities. The problem is when you have dolls that are made for eight-year-olds, as My Real Baby was, that claims right on its packaging, this is to help socialize your child. Because your child should not be socialized by a little robot doll.
Yeah, as a world, we're happy to apply solutions to problems that we have. Maybe we perceive that our children need to be socialized. Maybe we think that our parents need to have something to respond to in a nursing home. But those things lead to others, don't they?
Absolutely. You know, I've been called a species chauvinist, and I'd have to say that I think I wear that with pride. It was only a very few months ago that a book came out that proposed that we have love and sex with robots. And I had a Scientific American reporter on the phone to whom I was voicing my problems with the notion of making love with and marrying robots, who accused me of being a species chauvinist and that I was kind of like homophobes in the 70s and 80s. And I think that, you know, our culture has come to a very new place when we're talking about the rights of robots and the relational rights of robots and even thinking about them as potential partners to love and marry.
Boy, that's so far, though. And I think most people would say that that is far from where most of us are in our relationship to computers. Maybe we're headed that way. I don't know. I mean, at the moment, there are so many advantages to the information technology to us. We've talked about the ability to relate to people in nursing homes, for instance, but on a more practical level, most of us, I think, are happy now to have the ability to go online to look for medical advice, for instance. I'm not sure that I want a robot doctor, but I sure am
glad.
These
are the things, my point is that these are the things that we need to be thinking about. Every technology raises the question of our human purpose. What do we want from it? And very often, we've been caught up short because we haven't been sure of what our human purposes are. For example, I had two technologies demonstrated to me for how to take care of an elderly person, specifically how to turn them over in bed so that they don't get bed sores. And one technology, you kind of put your arms as the caretaker into gloves, hydraulic gloves, that help you lift the person you're taking care of so that you still have the kind of human touch, but you are being helped to lift something that you normally wouldn't be able to lift. And in the other one, and I should say the one that was kind of being happily adopted, you treat the person kind of like a pancake that you flip by putting, you know, something below and something above and sort of flipping. Now, I say that if we begin to look at technologies by considering their human purposes, our human purpose is to maintain a kind of human connection with the people that we're taking care of. And you don't go for the flipper, but you go for the enhanced arms.
You go for the things that make us more human rather than less.
Yes, you go for the technologies that enhance the values that we think of as most human.
Sherry Turkle is the author of The Second Self, Computers and the Human Spirit, and she's the founder and director of the MIT Initiative on Technology and Self.